Hello, everyone, and welcome to the special Holy Week edition of the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. I'm George Taylor. This is podcast number 53. This week's podcast is a production of the narrative of the Passion, Crucifixion, and Resurrection of Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior. This week in the Christian calendar, many Christians spend some time focusing on these events, which are recorded in all four of the Gospels. However, rather than focus on one author's telling of these events, I've sought to mesh together a cogent narrative of all four Gospels into a single telling of the story of this week. No, I didn't do this by myself. I leaned heavily on a chronological Bible compiled by F. Legard Smith, while making some editing changes of my own to keep the narrative flowing and true. All the words that you hear are from the Scriptures, in this case, a paraphrase called The Message. And now, here is our story. The Passion, Crucifixion, and Resurrection of Jesus Christ, as told in the Scriptures and narrated by George Taylor. Jesus and his disciples came to an area called Gethsemane. Jesus told his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John with him. He plunged into a sinkhole of agony. He told them, "I feel bad enough right now to die. Stay here and keep vigil with me." He pulled away from them about a stone's throw, knelt down, and prayed, "Father, remove this cup from me, but please, not what I want. What do you want?" At once an angel from heaven was at his side, strengthening him. He prayed on all the harder. Sweat wrung from him like drops of blood poured off his face. He got up from prayer, went back to the disciples, and found them asleep, drugged by grief. He said, "What business do you have sleeping? Get up, pray, so you won't give in to temptation." He then left them a second time. Again he prayed, "My Father, if there is no other way than this, drinking this cup to the dregs, I'm ready. Do it your way." When he came back, he again found them asleep. They simply couldn't keep their eyes open. This time he let them sleep on and went back a third time to pray, going over the same ground one last time. When he came back the next time, he said, "Are you going to sleep on and make a night of it? My time has come. The Son of Man is about to be handed over to the hands of sinners. Get up. Let's get going. My betrayer is here." Judas, his betrayer, knew the place because Jesus and his disciples went there often. So Judas led the way to the garden, and the Roman soldiers and police sent by the high priests and Pharisees followed. They arrived there with lanterns and torches and swords. Jesus, knowing by now everything that was coming down on him, went out and met them. He said, "Who are you after?" They answered,
"Jesus, the Nazarene."
He said, "That's me." The soldiers recoiled, totally taken back. Judas, his betrayer, stood out like a sore thumb. Jesus again asked, "Who are you after?" They answered,
"Jesus, the Nazarene."
"I told you," said Jesus, "that's me, I'm the one. So if it's me you're after, let these others go." This validated the words in his prayer, "I didn't lose one of those you gave." Just then, Simon Peter, who was carrying a sword, pulled it from its sheath and struck the chief priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. Malchus was the servant's name. Jesus ordered Peter, "Put back your sword. Do you think for a minute I'm not going to drink this cup the Father gave me?" Jesus spoke to those who had come, high priests, temple police, religion leaders. "What is this? Jumping me with swords and clubs as if I were a dangerous criminal? Day after day I've been with you in the temple, and you've not so much as lifted a hand against me. But do it your way. It's a dark night, a dark hour." Then the Roman soldiers, under their commander, joined by the Jewish police, seized Jesus and tied him up. They took him first to Annas, father-in-law of Caiaphas. Caiaphas was the chief priest that year. It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it was to their advantage that one man die for the people. Simon Peter and another disciple followed Jesus. That other disciple was known to the chief priest, and so he went in with Jesus to the chief priest's courtyard. Peter had to stay outside. Then the other disciple went out, spoke to the doorkeeper, and got Peter in. The young woman, who was the doorkeeper, said to Peter, "Aren't you one of this man's disciples?" He said, "No, I'm not." The servants and police had made a fire because of the cold and were huddled there warming themselves. Peter stood with them, trying to get warm. Annas interrogated Jesus regarding his disciples and his teaching. Jesus answered, "I've spoken openly in public. I've taught regularly in meeting places and the temple, where the Jews all came together. Everything has been out in the open. I've said nothing in secret. So why are you treating me like a conspirator? Question those who have been listening to me. They know well what I've said. My teachings have all been above board." When he said this, one of the policemen standing there slapped Jesus across the face, saying, "How dare you speak to the chief priest like that?" Jesus replied, "If I've said something wrong, prove it. But if I've spoken the plain truth, why this slapping around?" Then Annas sent him, still tied up, to the chief priest, Caiaphas. All this time, Peter was sitting out in the courtyard. One servant girl came up to him and said, "You were with Jesus the Galilean." In front of everybody there, he denied it.
I don't know what you're talking about."
The high priest, conspiring with the Jewish council, looked high and low for evidence against Jesus by which they could sentence him to death. They found nothing. Plenty of people were willing to bring in false charges, but nothing added up, and they ended up canceling each other out. Then a few of them stood up and lied.
"We heard him say, 'I'm going to tear down this temple built by hard labor, and in 3 days build another without lifting a hand.'"
But even they couldn't agree exactly. In the middle of this, the chief priest stood up and asked Jesus,
"What do you have to say to the accusation?"
Jesus was silent. He said nothing. The chief priest tried again, this time asking,
"Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed?"
Jesus said, "Yes, I am. And you'll see it yourself. The Son of Man seated at the right hand of the Mighty One, arriving on the clouds of heaven." The chief priest lost his temper. Ripping his clothes, he yelled,
"Did you hear that? After that, do we need witnesses? You heard the blasphemy. Are you going to stand for it?"
They condemned him, one and all. The sentence, death. Shortly after that, some bystanders approached Peter.
"You've got to be one of them. Your accent gives you away."
Peter said,
"Man, I don't know what you're talking about."
At that very moment, the last word hardly off his lips, a rooster crowed. Just then the master turned and looked at Peter. Peter remembered what the master had said to him. "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. He went out and cried and cried and cried. They led Jesus then from Caiaphas to the Roman governor's palace. It was early morning. They themselves didn't enter the palace because they didn't want to be disqualified from eating the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and spoke.
"What charge do you bring against this man?"
they said.
"If he hadn't been doing something evil, do you think we'd be here bothering you?"
Pilate said,
"You take him. Judge him by your law."
The Jews said, "We're not allowed to kill anyone." This would confirm Jesus' word, indicating the way he would die. Pilate went back into the palace and called for Jesus. He said,
"Are you the King of the Jews?"
Jesus answered, "Are you saying this on your own, or did others tell you this about me?" Pilate said,
"Do I look like a Jew? Your people and your high priests turned you over to me. What did you do?"
"My kingdom," said Jesus, "doesn't consist of what you see around you. If it did, my followers would fight so that I wouldn't be handed over to the Jews. But I am not that kind of a king, not the world's kind of king." Then Pilate said,
"So, are you a king or not?"
Jesus answered, "You tell me, because I am king. I was born and entered the world so that I could witness to the truth. Everyone who cares for truth, who has any feeling for the truth, recognizes my voice." Pilate said,
"What is truth?"
Then he went back out to the Jews and told them,
"I find nothing wrong with this man."
But they were vehement.
"He's stirring up unrest among the people with his teaching, disturbing the peace everywhere, starting in Galilee and now all through Judea. He's a dangerous man, endangering the peace."
When Pilate heard that, he asked,
"So, he's a Galilean?"
Realizing that he properly came under Herod's jurisdiction, he passed the buck to Herod, who just happened to be in Jerusalem for a few days. Herod was delighted when Jesus showed up. He had wanted for a long time to see him. He had heard so much about him. He hoped to see him do something spectacular. He peppered him with questions. Jesus didn't answer. Not one word. But the high priests and religion scholars were right there, saying their piece, strident and shrill in their accusations. Mightily offended, Herod turned on Jesus. His soldiers joined in, taunting and jeering. Then they dressed him up in an elaborate king costume and sent him back to Pilate. That day, Herod and Pilate became thick as thieves. Always before, they had kept their distance. While court was still in session, Pilate's wife sent him a message. "Don't get mixed up in judging this noble man. I've just been through a long and troubled night because of a dream about him." Then Pilate called in the high priests, rulers, and the others and said,
"You brought this man to me as a disturber of the peace. I examined him in front of all of you and found there was nothing to your charge. And neither did Herod, for he has sent him back here with a clean bill of health. It's clear that he has done nothing wrong, let alone anything deserving death."
It was a custom at the feast to release a prisoner, anyone the people asked for. There was one prisoner called Barabbas, locked up with the insurrectionists who had committed murder during the uprising against Rome. As the crowd came up and began to present its petition for him to release a prisoner, Pilate anticipated them.
"Do you want me to release the King of the Jews to you?"
Pilate knew by this time that it was through sheer spite that the high priests had turned Jesus over to him. But the high priests, by then, had worked up the crowd to ask for the release of Barabbas. Pilate came back.
"So, what do I do with this man you call King of the Jews?"
They yelled.
"Nail him to a cross!" Pilate objected. "But for what crime?"
But they yelled all the louder.
"Nail him to a cross!"
He tried a third time.
"But for what crime? I found nothing in him deserving death. I'm going to warn him to watch his step and let him go."
Pilate went back out again and said to them,
"I present him to you, but I want you to know that I do not find him guilty of any crime."
Just then, Jesus came out, wearing the thorn crown and purple robe. Pilate announced,
"Here he is, the man."
When the high priests and the police saw him, they shouted in a frenzy,
"Crucify! Crucify!"
Pilate told them,
"You take him. You crucify him. I find nothing wrong with him."
The Jews answered,
"We have a law, and by that law he must die, because he claimed to be the Son of God."
When Pilate heard this, he became even more scared. He went back into the palace and said to Jesus,
"Where did you come from?"
Jesus gave no answer. Pilate said,
"You won't talk? Don't you know that I have the authority to pardon you and the authority to crucify you?"
Jesus said, "You haven't a shred of authority over me, except what has been given you from heaven. That's why the one who betrayed me to you has committed a far greater fault." At this, Pilate tried his best to pardon him, but the Jews shouted him down,
"If you pardon this man, you're no friend of Caesar's. Anyone setting himself up as king defies Caesar."
When Pilate heard those words, he led Jesus outside. He sat down at the judgment seat in the area designated Stone Court, in Hebrew, Gabbatha. It was the preparation day for Passover. The hour was noon. Pilate said to the Jews,
"Here is your king."
They shouted back,
"Kill him! Kill him! Crucify him!"
Pilate said,
"I am to crucify your king?"
The high priests answered,
"We have no king except Caesar."
When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere and that a riot was imminent, he took a basin of water and washed his hands in full sight of the crowd, saying,
"I'm washing my hands of responsibility for this man's death. From now on, it's in your hands, your judge and jury."
The crowd answered,
"We'll take the blame, we and our children after us."
Then he pardoned Barabbas, but he had Jesus whipped and then handed over for crucifixion. They took off the purple cape and put his own clothes back on him. Then they marched him out to nail him to a cross. As they led him off, they made Simon, a man from Cyrene, who happened to be coming in from the countryside, carry the cross behind Jesus. A huge crowd of people followed, along with women weeping and carrying on. Two others, both criminals, were taken along with him for execution. When they got to the place called Skull Hill, they crucified him, along with the criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. Jesus prayed, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." Pilate wrote a sign and had it placed on the cross. It read, "Jesus the Nazarene, the King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read the sign because the place where Jesus was crucified was right next to the city. It was written in Hebrew, Latin, and Greek. The Jewish high priests objected. "Don't write," they said to Pilate, "the King of the Jews. Make it, 'This man said, I am the King of the Jews.'" When they crucified him, the Roman soldiers took his clothes and divided them up four ways, to each soldier a fourth. But his robe was seamless, a single piece of weaving. So they said to each other, "Let's not tear it up. Let's throw dice to see who gets it." This confirmed the scripture that said, "They divided up my clothes among them and threw dice for my coat." The soldiers validated the scriptures. People passing along the road jeered, shaking their heads in mock lament. "You brag that you could tear down the temple and then rebuild it in 3 days. So show us your stuff. Save yourself If you're really God's son, come down from that cross." The high priests, along with the religion scholars and leaders, were right there, mixing it up with the rest of them, having a great time poking fun at him.
"He saved others. He can't save himself. King of Israel, is he? Then let him get down from that cross. We'll all become believers then. He was so sure of God. Well, let him rescue his son now, if he wants him. He did claim to be God's son, didn't he?"
One of the criminals hanging alongside cursed him.
"Some messiah you are. Save yourself. Save us."
But the other one made him shut up.
"Have you no fear of God? You're getting the same as him. We deserve this, but not him. He did nothing to deserve this."
Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you enter your kingdom." He said, "Don't worry, I will. Today you'll join me in paradise." While the soldiers were looking after themselves, Jesus' mother, his aunt, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene stood at the foot of the cross. Jesus saw his mother and the disciple he loved standing near her. He said to his mother, "Woman, here is your son." Then to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that moment, the disciple accepted her as his own mother. From noon to three, the whole earth was dark. Around mid-afternoon, Jesus groaned out of the depths, crying loudly, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you abandoned me?" Some bystanders who heard him said,
"He's calling for Elijah."
One of them ran and got a sponge soaked in sour wine and lifted it on a stick so he could drink. The others joked,
"Don't be in such a hurry. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him."
After he took the wine, Jesus said, "It's done. Complete." Jesus called loudly,
"Father, I place my life in your hands."
Then he breathed his last. Bowing his head, he offered up his spirit. At that moment, the temple curtain was ripped in two, top to bottom. There was an earthquake, and rocks were split in pieces. What's more, tombs were opened up, and many bodies of believers asleep in their graves were raised. After Jesus' resurrection, they left the tombs, entered the holy city, and appeared to many. The captain of the guard and those with him, when they saw the earthquake and everything else that was happening, were scared to death. They said, "This has to be the Son of God." There were also quite a few women watching from a distance, women who had followed Jesus from Galilee in order to serve him. Then the Jews, since it was the day of Sabbath preparation, and so the bodies wouldn't stay on the crosses over Sabbath, it was a high holy day that year, petitioned Pilate that their legs be broken to speed death and the bodies taken down. So the soldiers came and broke the legs of the first man crucified with Jesus, and then the other. When they got to Jesus, they saw that he was already dead, so they didn't break his legs. One of the soldiers stabbed him in the side with his spear. Blood and water gushed out. The eyewitness to these things has presented an accurate report. He saw it himself and is telling the truth so that you also will believe. These things that happened confirm the scriptures. Not a bone in his body was broken. And other scriptures that read, "They will stare at the one they pierced." Late in the afternoon, since it was the day of preparation, that is, Sabbath Eve, Joseph of Arimathea, a highly respected member of the Jewish council, came. He was one who lived expectantly, on the lookout for the kingdom of God. Working up his courage, he went to Pilate and asked for Jesus' body. Pilate questioned whether he would be dead that soon and called for the captain to verify that he was really dead. Assured by the captain, he gave Joseph the body. So Joseph came and took him. Nicodemus, who had first come to Jesus at night, came now in broad daylight carrying a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 75 pounds. They took Jesus' body and, following the Jewish burial custom, wrapped it in linen with the spices. There was a garden near the place where he was crucified, and in the garden a new tomb in which no one had yet been placed. So, because it was Sabbath preparation for the Jews, and the tomb was convenient, they placed Jesus in it. After sundown, the high priest and Pharisees arranged a meeting with Pilate. They said,
"Sir, we just remembered that that liar announced while he was still alive, 'After 3 days, I will be raised.' We've got to get that tomb sealed until the third day. There's a good chance his disciples will come and steal the corpse and then go around saying he's risen from the dead. Then we'll be worse off than before, the final deceit surpassing the first."
Pilate told them,
"You will have a guard. Go ahead and secure it the best you can."
So they went out and secured the tomb, sealing the stone and posting guards. Early in the morning on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone was moved away from the entrance. She ran at once to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, breathlessly panting, "They took the master from the tomb. We don't know where they put him." Peter and the other disciple left immediately for the tomb. They ran neck and neck. The other disciple got to the tomb first, outrunning Peter. Stooping to look in, he saw the pieces of linen cloth lying there, but he didn't go in. Simon Peter arrived after him, entered the tomb, observed the linen cloths lying there, and the kerchief used to cover his head, not lying with the linen cloths, but separate, neatly folded by itself. Then the other disciple, the one who had gotten there first, went into the tomb, took one look at the evidence, and believed. No one yet knew from the scripture that he had to rise from the dead. The disciples then went back home, but Mary stood outside the tomb, weeping. As she wept, she knelt to look into the tomb and saw two angels sitting there, dressed in white, one at the head, the other at the foot, where Jesus' body had been laid. They said to her, "Woman, why do you weep?"
"They took my master," she said, "and I don't know where they put him."
After she said this, she turned away and saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't recognize him. Jesus spoke to her, "Woman, why do you weep? Who are you looking for?" She was thinking he was the gardener and said,
"Mister, if you took him, tell me where you put him so I can care for him."
Jesus said, "Mary." Turning to face him, she said in Hebrew, "Rabboni," meaning teacher. Jesus said, "Don't cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go to my brothers and tell them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went, telling the news to the disciples, "I saw the Master," and she told them everything he said to her. The Passion, Crucifixion, and Resurrection of Jesus Christ, as told in the Scriptures and narrated by George Taylor. As we've spent some time looking at the Passion, Crucifixion, and Resurrection of Jesus Christ, I pray that you've been blessed by listening to this reading. Your comments are always welcome and appreciated. You can leave messages on Facebook at facebook.com/narrationbygeorge or comment on Twitter. I'm @narrationbygeo or go to my website, narrationbygeorge.com, and click on the contact link at the top of the page. That will send me a direct email. I pray you have a glorious and blessed Easter, and remember, share that blessing that God has shared with you.